Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in this half-hour segment, we're going to continue with a speculative line of discussion that I've been exploring for a number of years, dealing with the possibility that earthquake-causing technology may in fact be a reality in the late 1990s. Reviewing a very short but very portentous piece of information, research credit on this goes to Dr. Nick Begich, the author with Gene Manning of Angels Don't Play This Harp. This is from a news briefing that was put on the Internet by the Office of the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs. It comes from the website, which I assume is the Pentagon website, www.dtic.mil/defenselink, one word, /news/April97/. That again, www.dtic.mil/defenselink, one word, /news/APR97/. This is from a keynote address that was given by Secretary of Defense William S. Cohen at a conference on terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, and U.S. strategy at the Georgia Center Mahler Auditorium, or Mahler Auditorium, M-A-H-L-E-R, at the University of Georgia in Athens, Georgia. Secretary Cohen was joined by Georgia Senator Sam Nunn and Senator Richard G. Lugar of Indiana. In responding to a question concerning a simulated, or basically a false alarm of biological terrorism at the B'nai B'rith headquarters in Washington, Secretary Cohen, in discussing the technologies being developed by various, quote, terrorist nations, unquote, had the following to say of these terrorist nations. Others are engaging even in an eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes or volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. Now, despite the fact that officially this possibility has been poo-pooed by, quote, experts, unquote, in the field, we saw some oblique poo-pooing in the article from the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, issue of February and January of 1997. We saw a little more poo-pooing in a New York Times article from January 21st of 1997. And still more in the excerpt that I read from a very fine book about the cult, about the Aum Shinrikyo cult, entitled The Cult at the End of the World by David Kaplan and Andrew Marshall. Again, such notions, the possibility, I should say, that earthquakes can be caused as weapons of war, along with other natural disasters, that possibility has been officially poo-pooed by officialdom, but the fact of the matter is that such technologies were under exploration, I should say, decades ago, and as we looked at in the first half-hour segment, was the focal point of a treaty between the U.S. and Soviet Union in the late 1970s, i.e. 20 years ago. Also note that in the passage that I read from The Cult at the End of the World, again, that's by David E. Kaplan and Andrew Marshall, published in hardcover by Crown Publishers, copyright 1996. There is discussion of Nikola Tesla and his explorations of earthquake-causing technology, and note that even though there was official poo-pooing by so-called experts in the field, as Kaplan and Marshall properly noted, much of Tesla's research remains classified more than 50 years after his death, and Tesla died in 1943. What we're going to do now is to take a look at the difference between the official perceptions or official spin control and hard objective reality. The fact of the matter is that Nikola Tesla used mechanical resonance to cause a small earthquake in New York City in 1896, more than 100 years ago. So the notion that earthquakes couldn't be caused is simply BS. Nikola Tesla did it in 1896, and we're going to take a look at that right now. A description of that information comes from one of the very best books about Nikola Tesla, the brilliant and controversial engineer. This book is entitled Prodigal Genius, The Life of Nikola Tesla, Inventor Extraordinary. It's authored by John J. O'Neill, and this book is published in softcover by the Angriff Press. That's A-N-G-R-I-F-F Press, and it's copyrighted 1978. And this is an excellent book, and I would refer interested listeners to it. By the way, you can contact Angriff Press at P.O. Box 2726, Hollywood, California, 90078. Again, the Angriff Press, P.O. Box 2726, Hollywood, California, 90078. And for people who'd like to follow up on this documentation, again, that's the address. For John J. O'Neill's Prodigal Genius, The Life of Nikola Tesla, Inventor Extraordinary. And in Prodigal Genius, there's a description of Nikola Tesla's having caused a small earthquake in New York City using mechanical resonance. By the way, this was an unintentional causing of the earthquake. O'Neill writes, Tesla pursued his studies of mechanical vibrations in many directions. This was almost a virgin field for scientific research. Scarcely any fundamental research has been done in the field since Pythagoras, 2,500 years before, had established the science of music through his study of vibrating strings. And many of the wonders with which Tesla had startled the world in the field of high frequency and high potential currents had grown out of his simple secret for tuning electrical circuits so that the electricity vibrated in resonance with its circuit. He now visualized mechanical vibrations building up resonance conditions in the same way to produce effects of tremendous magnitude on physical objects. In order to carry out what he expected to be some minor and very small-scale experiments, he screwed the base of one of his small mechanical oscillators to an iron supporting pillar in the middle of his laboratory and set it into oscillation. It had been his observation that it took some time to build up its maximum speed of vibration. The longer it operated, the faster the tempo it attained. He had noticed that all objects did not respond in the same way to vibrations. One of the many objects around the laboratory would suddenly go into violent vibration as it came into resonance with the fundamental vibration of the oscillator or some harmonic of it. As the period of the oscillator changed, the first object would stop and some other object in resonance with the new rate would start vibrating. The reason for this selective response was very clear to Tesla, but he had never previously had the opportunity to observe the phenomenon on a really large scale. Tesla's laboratory was on an upper floor of a loft building. It was on the north side of Houston Street and the second house east of Mulberry Street. About 300 feet south of Houston Street on the east side of Mulberry Street was the long, four-story red brick building famous as police headquarters. Throughout the neighborhood, there were many loft buildings ranging from 5 to 10 stories in height, occupied by factories of all kinds. Sandwiched between them were the small, narrow tenement houses of a densely packed Italian population. A few blocks to the south was Chinatown. A few blocks to the west was the garment trades area. A short distance to the east was a densely crowded tenement house district. It was in this highly variegated neighborhood that Tesla unexpectedly staged a spectacular demonstration of the properties of sustained, powerful vibrations. The surrounding population knew about Tesla's laboratory, knew it was a place where strange, magical, mysterious events took place, and where an equally strange man was doing fearful and wonderful things with that tremendously dangerous secret agent known as electricity. Tesla, they knew, was a man who was to be both venerated and feared, and they did a much better job of fearing than of venerating him. Quite unmindful of what anyone thought about him, Tesla carried on his vibration and all other experiments. Just what experiment he had in mind on this particular morning will never be known. He busied himself with preparations for it, while his oscillator on the supporting iron pillar of the structure kept building up an ever higher frequency of vibrations. He noted that every now and then, some heavy piece of apparatus would vibrate sharply, the floor under him would rumble for a second or two, that a window pane would sing audibly, and other similar transient events would happen, all of which was quite familiar to him. These observations told him that his oscillator was tuning up nicely, and he probably wondered why he had not tried it firmly attached to a solid building support before. Things were not going so well in the neighborhood, however. Down in police headquarters in Mulberry Street, the cops were quite familiar with strange sounds and lights coming from the Tesla laboratory. They could hear clearly the sharp snapping of the lightning created by his coils. If anything queer was happening in the neighborhood, they knew that Tesla was in back of it in some way or other. On this particular morning, the cops were surprised to feel the building rumbling under their feet. Chairs moved across floors with no one near them. Objects on the officers' desks danced about, and the desks themselves moved. It must be an earthquake. It grew stronger. Chunks of plaster fell from the ceiling. A flood of water ran down one of the stairs from a broken pipe. The windows started to vibrate with a shrill note that grew more intense. Some of the windows shattered. Quote, "That isn't an earthquake," shouted one of the officers. "It's that blankety-blank Tesla. Get up there quickly," unquote, he called to a squad of men, and again quoting, "and stop him. Use force if you have to, but stop him. He'll wreck the city. The officers started on a run for the building around the corner, pouring into the streets were many scores of people excitedly leaving nearby tenement and factory buildings, believing an earthquake had caused the smashing of windows, breaking of pipes, moving of furniture, and the strange vibrations. Without waiting for the slow, pokey elevator, the cops rushed up the stairs, and as they did so, they felt the building vibrate even more strongly than did police headquarters. There was a sense of impending doom that the whole building would disintegrate, and their fears were not relieved by the sound of smashing glass and the queer roars and screams that came from the walls and floors. Could they reach Tesla's laboratory in time to stop him? Or would the building tumble down on their heads and everyone in it be buried in the ruins, and probably every building in the neighborhood? Maybe he was making the whole earth shake in this way. Would this madman be destroying the world? It was destroyed once before by water. Maybe this time it would be destroyed by that agent of the devil that they call electricity. Just as the cops rushed into Tesla's laboratory to tackle they knew not what, the vibrations stopped and they beheld a strange sight. They arrived just in time to see the tall, gaunt figure of the inventor swing a heavy sledgehammer and shatter a small iron contraption mounted on the post in the middle of the room. Pandemonium gave way to a deep, heavy silence. Tesla was the first to break the silence. Resting his sledgehammer against the pillar, he turned his tall, lean, coatless figure to the cops. He was always self-possessed, always a commanding presence, an effect that could in no way be attributed to his slender build, but seemed more to emanate from his eyes. Bowing from the waist in his courtly manner, he addressed the policemen, who were too out of breath to speak, and probably overawed into silence by their fantastic experience. "Gentlemen," he said, "I am sorry, but you are just a trifle too late to witness my experiment. I found it necessary to stop it suddenly and unexpectedly and in an unusual way just as you entered. If you will come around this evening, I will have another oscillator attached to this platform and each of you can stand on it. You will, I am sure, find it a most interesting and pleasurable experience. Now you must leave, for I have many things to do. Good day, gentlemen." George Scherf, Tesla's secretary, was standing nearby when Tesla so dramatically smashed his earthquake maker. Tesla never told the story beyond this point, and Mr. Scherf, S-C-H-E-R-F-F, declares he does not recall what the response of the cops was. Imagination must furnish the finale to the story. At the moment, though, Tesla was quite sincere in his attitude. He had no idea of what had happened elsewhere in the neighborhood as a result of his experiment, but the effect on his own laboratory had been sufficiently threatening to cause him to halt it suddenly. When he learned the details, however, he was convinced that he was correct in his belief that the field of mechanical vibrations was rich with opportunities for scientific investigation. We have no records available of any further major experiments with vibration in that laboratory. Perhaps the police and building departments had offered some emphatic suggestions to him concerning experiments of this nature. Tesla's observations in this experiment were limited to what took place on the floor of the building in which his laboratory was located, but apparently very little happened there until a great deal had happened elsewhere. The oscillator was firmly fixed to a supporting column, and there were similar supporting columns directly under it on each floor down to the foundations. The vibrations were transmitted through the columns to the ground. This section of the city is built on deep sand that extends down hundreds of feet before bedrock is reached. It is well known to seismologists that earthquake vibrations are transmitted by sand with much greater intensity than they are by rock. The ground under the building and around it was, therefore, an excellent transmitter of mechanical vibrations which spread out in all directions. They may have reached a mile or more. They were more intense, of course, near their source and became weaker as the distance increased. However, even weak vibrations that are sustained can build up surprisingly large effects when they are absorbed by an object with which they are in resonance. A distant object in resonance can be thrown into strong vibration, whereas a much nearer object not in resonance will be left unaffected. It was this selective resonance that was apparently operating in Tesla's experiment. Buildings other than his own came into resonance with the increasing tempo of his oscillator long before his own building was affected. After the pandemonium was underway for some time elsewhere, and the higher frequencies were reached, his immediate surroundings started to come into resonance. When resonance is reached, the effects follow instantly and powerfully. Tesla knew this, So when he observed dangerous resonance effects developing in his building, he realized he had to act fast. The oscillator was being operated by compressed air supplied by a motor-driven compressor that fed the air into a tank where it was stored under pressure. Even if the motor were shut off, there was plenty of air in the tank to keep the oscillator going for many minutes, and in that time the building could be completely wrecked and reduced to a pile of debris. With the vibrations reaching this dangerous amplitude, there was no time to try to disconnect the vibrator from the airline or to do anything about releasing the air from the tank. There was time for only one thing, and Tesla did that. He grabbed the nearby sledgehammer and took a mighty swing at the oscillator in hopes of putting it out of operation. He succeeded in his first attempt. The device was made of cast iron and was of rugged construction. There were no delicate parts that could be easily damaged. Tesla has never published a description of the device, but its construction was principally that of a piston which moved back and forth inside a cast iron cylinder. The only way to stop it from operating was to smash the outer cylinder. Fortunately, that is what happened from the first blow. As Tesla turned around after delivering this lucky blow and beheld the visiting policeman, he could not understand the reason for their visit. The dangerous vibrations had developed in his building only within the preceding minute, and the policeman would not have had time to plan a visit in connection with them, he figured, so they must have come for some other, less critical purpose, and therefore he proposed to dismiss them until a more opportune moment. Tesla related this experience to me when I asked the inventor's opinion of a plan that I had suggested some time previously to Elmer Sperry, Jr., that's capital S-P-E-R-R-Y, son of the famous inventor of many gyroscope devices. When a heavy gyroscope, such as is used in stabilizing ships, is forced to turn on its axis, it transmits a powerful downward thrust through the bearings in which the supporting gimbal is mounted. If a battery of such gyroscopes were mounted in regions where severe earthquakes took place, It would transmit thrusts to the ground at equally timed intervals and build up resonance vibrations in the strata of the earth that would cause earthquake strains to be released while they were of small magnitude, thus producing very small earthquakes, instead of letting the strains build up to large magnitudes which, when they let go, would cause devastating earthquakes. The idea made a strong appeal to Tesla, and in his discussion, after telling me of the experience here related, he further declared that he had so far developed his study of vibrations that he could establish a new science of telegeodynamics, unquote, which would deal not only with the transmission of powerful impulses through the earth to distant points to produce effects of large magnitude. In addition, he could use the same principles to detect distant objects. In the later 30s, before the outbreak of the war, he declared that he could apply these principles for the detection of submarines or other ships at a distance, even though they were lying at anchor and no engines operating on them. His system of telegeodynamics, using mechanical vibrations, Tesla declared, would make it possible to determine the physical constant of the Earth and to locate ore deposits far beneath the surface. This latter prediction has since been fulfilled, for many oil fields have been discovered by studying the vibrations reflected from subsurface strata. Quote, "So powerful are the effects of the telegeodynamic oscillator," unquote, said Tesla in reviewing the subject in the 30s, again quoting, "that I could now go over to the Empire State Building and reduce it to a tangled mass of wreckage in a very short time. I could accomplish this result with utmost certainty and without any difficulty whatever. I would use a small mechanical vibrating device, an engine so small you could slip it in your pocket. I could attach it to any part of the building, start it in operation, allow it 12 to 13 minutes to come to full resonance. The building would first respond with gentle tremors, and the vibrations would then become so powerful that the whole structure would go into resonant oscillations of such great amplitude and power that rivets in the steel beams would be loosened and sheared. The outer stone coating would be thrown off, and then the skeleton steel structure would collapse in all its parts. It would take about 2.5 horsepower to drive the oscillator to produce this effect." Now note, here Tesla is talking about mechanical oscillation. He also explored electrical or electromagnetic oscillation as well, and that may very well be what is implicated in some of the earthquake-causing technology alluded to by Secretary of Defense Cohen. Electromagnetic resonance and Tesla's development of that, John J. O'Neill writes as follows in Prodigal Genius, The Life of Nikola Tesla. Tesla, in his Colorado Springs laboratory, was pumping a steady flow of current worth at the above rate about $15 an hour into the Earth. In an hour, he charged the Earth with several hundred times as much electrical energy as it contained in a single lightning stroke, as is contained in a single lightning stroke. Owing to resonance phenomena, he could build up electrical effects in the Earth greatly exceeding those of lightning, since it was only necessary once resonance was established to supply energy equal to frictional losses in order to maintain this condition. In describing his work with a giant oscillator, Tesla, using conservative estimates of his results, stated in his article in Century Magazine of June of 1900, "However extraordinary the results may appear, they are but trifling compared with those attainable by apparatus designed on these same principles. I have produced electrical discharges, the actual path of which from end to end was probably more than 100 feet long, but it would not be difficult to reach lengths 100 times as great. I have produced electrical movements occurring at the rate of approximately 100,000 horsepower, but rates of 1, 5, or 10 million horsepower are easily practicable. In these experiments, effects were developed incomparably greater than ever produced by any human agencies, and yet these results are but an embryo of what is to be. The method used by Tesla to set the Earth in electrical oscillation is the electrical counterpart of the mechanical device previously described, the plunger bobbing up and down at the right rhythm that created the stationary waves in the water. Tesla used a stream of electrons which were pumped into and drawn out of the Earth at a rapid rhythmic rate. At the time the experiments were made, the electron still was not known to be the fundamental atom of electricity, so the operation was spoken of simply as the flow of electricity. The pumping operation was carried on at a rate of 150,000 oscillations per second. These would produce electrical pulsations with a wavelength of 2,000 meters, about 6,600 feet. When the moving waves expanded outward from Colorado Springs, they traveled in all directions in ever-increasing circles until they passed over the bulge of the Earth, and then in ever smaller circles and with increasing intensity converged on the diametrically opposite point of the Earth, a trifle to the west of the two French islands Amsterdam and St. Paul, in the area between the Indian and Antarctic Oceans, midway between the southern tip of Africa and the southwest corner of Australia. Here, a tremendous electrical South Pole was built up, marked by a wave of great amplitude that rose and fell in unison as Tesla's apparatus at its North Pole in Colorado Springs. As this wave fell, it sent back an electrical echo which produced the same effect at Colorado Springs. Just as it arrived back at Colorado Springs, the oscillator was working to build up a wave that would reinforce it and send it back more powerfully than before to the antipode to repeat the performance. And as people are no doubt aware of, when electricity flows, it creates an electromagnetic field. I'm not an expert in this type of technology, to put it mildly, so I'm simply providing the ground, the foundation documentation upon which technically qualified people could perhaps conduct more research. However, again, the manipulation of electromagnetism to cause earthquakes is something that has been under research for a long time, and Nikola Tesla used mechanical oscillation to cause a small earthquake in New York City in 1896. That was the date of the event that I described or that I read. And again, that was more than 100 years ago. So the notion that earthquakes could be caused is not something that people should poo-poo. And again, note that much of Nikola Tesla's research is still classified more than 50 years after his death in 1943. Returning once again to the book Angels Don't Play This Harp, Advances in Tesla Technology, co-authored by Gene Manning, M-A-N-N-I-N-G, and Dr. Nick Begich, published in softcover by the Earth Pulse Press, copyright 1995. Earth Pulse Press, by the way, P.O. Box 201393. P.O. Box 201393. That's Anchorage, Alaska, 99520. And the book is the ISBN number 0-964-8812-0-9. And of speculation that perhaps U.S. experimentation in the atmosphere may have helped to trigger an enormous earthquake in Alaska, the authors write as follows. The U.S. military did not know what the outcome would be in the early 1960s when they planned an assault on the Earth's magnetic field with copper needles each 2 to 4 centimeters long. They planned to increase the size of the needle dump in space, quote, if the project proves successful, unquote. Apparently it was a bust, and it was hushed up and kept out of the mass media. Another independent researcher, Lee Richmond Donahue, that's L-E-I-G-H, Richmond Donahue, tracked events during the post-war years and through 1977 alongside a physics genius, her late husband, Walter Richmond. She writes, quote, "When the military sent up a band of tiny copper wires into the ionosphere to orbit the planet so as to, quote, reflect radio waves and make reception clear, we had the 8.5 Alaska earthquake, and Chile lost a good deal of its coast. That band of copper wires interfered with the planetary magnetic field." So again, those researchers have speculated that by an accidental interference with the Earth's magnetic field may have triggered the Great Alaska Quake of 1964. And I would not dismiss the possibility that by manipulating Project HARP or other technologies built on some of Nikola Tesla's discoveries, again, much of his research still classified more than 50 years after his death, that earthquake technology could become a reality. Again, all of the half-hour segments that I've done, the various interviews that I've done, the archive shows, and most of the lecture tapes that I've done are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. Their mailing address is P.O. Box 1179, Box 1179. That's in Ben Lomond, California, zip code 95005. Once again, Spitfire, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, zip code 95005. The email address for Spitfire is A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, that's A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, at ix.netcom.com. Once again, A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, at ix.netcom.com. Descriptions of all of the tapes available from Spitfire can be accessed on the World Wide Web, as well as a suggested reading list, prices, etc. You can point your web browser at www.kfjc.org and look for my name in the public affairs section. Again, www.kfjc.org and look in the public affairs section, and you'll see all of the relevant information for Spitfire. I'm in the process of attempting to start a publication called Other Means. I want to note that the publication is having some financial troubles, that people should not pre-subscribe to the publication. They should only subscribe an issue at a time. We've had a handful of pre-subscriptions. As I speak, on June 1st of 1997, the first issue is being printed and should be out in a matter of a few weeks. However, we are having some financial problems, so please do not pre-subscribe. There have been a handful of pre-subscriptions. People should only subscribe an issue at a time. Needless to say, if any of the people who have, the handful of people who have pre-subscribed do not get any of the issues for which they had pre-subscribed, they will be compensated. Again, it's a small handful of people, but in the event that we're not able to come out with as many issues as they had pre-subscribed to, they will, of course, be compensated. So please do not be alarmed in that regard. By the way, someone called and apprised me of the information concerning the website for this news briefing from the Pentagon. This, again, was Secretary of Defense William Cohn, and he was speaking on April 28th of 1997. The proper location, the web location on the Pentagon website, www.dtic.mil/defense-news/APR97/t042897_small-0428coh.html. One more time, www.dtic.mil/defense-news/April97/small-042897_small-0428coh.html. That concludes this broadcast. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.